One ship he served on rests 3 miles deep in the Pacific Ocean. On his wall sits a purple heart, and seared into his memory are the moments he survived from start to finish in World War II.
And all of a sudden, something hit me in the face like you hit with a sledgehammer. I wasn't scared. I thought I was dead. It was a terrible shock.
Want to hear the rest of that story? Tune in this afternoon. I'm Paul Leffler, hoping you'll join me for another moving installment of Hometown Heroes Today at 1, only on News Talk 580 KMJ.
News Talk 580 KMJ presents Hometown Heroes, honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, with you every Saturday afternoon on News Talk 580 KMJ and online at kmjnow.com. It's the middle of August, and if you know your history, you know that it's a special anniversary we celebrate this weekend. Tomorrow is National Spirit of 45 Day, honoring the 66th anniversary of the end of World War II. Congress passed a bill last year making that a National Day of Remembrance, and there are some Spirit of 45 Day celebrations around Central California, not in Fresno and Visalia this year, but if you're in Atascadero or anywhere on the Central Coast, at the Atascadero Lake Park Bandstand tomorrow at 11:15, a special concert, a Spirit of 45 celebration. They actually heard about it last year on this program and put something together. So go out and join Brett Heineman and the gang in Atascadero tomorrow at 11:15. I'm visiting this week with a Fresno resident, 89-year-old Bill Carpenter, a Navy veteran of World War II. And he's going to take us start to finish in World War II from an American perspective, because he lived through all of that. He served for a while on a ship that is quite well known from World War II history, the USS Yorktown. We're going to hear about that, but let's start early on. I want to hear about the Kansas farm boy who turned 18 and decided he wanted to join the Navy. Was it just you didn't see enough water there on the plains that you wanted to get on a ship?
I never saw a ship before.
Never ever seen a ship, but you joined the Navy. What was it that made you, because you weren't drafted, this was a choice of your own making, America was not at war yet, maybe there were some rumblings of it, but what made you decide, you know what, I want to join the Navy?
Well, I was a dumb damn student, that's one thing. And some other guys just come home from Great Lakes. I said, heck, I'd like to join the Navy. So I did.
So you'd heard about this Great Lakes Naval Training Center and that it was a lot of fun. Did you hear about the great football teams they had there or what? What was the allure?
Well, just none at all. That's where they sent you. Like I say, we graduated from there and then we were sent to San Diego, which we went aboard the old Portland heavy cruiser, took us to Pearl Harbor, and went aboard the Yorktown at that time. Yorktown was fairly new then. It was built in 37, I think. It was built for about $10 million, a little over.
Which was a whole lot of money back then. So the Yorktown is an aircraft carrier. This is a big, big ship. Can you compare it to maybe your hometown in Kansas? Was this ship bigger than your hometown?
No. No, it was big for them, but now they're so big, they're like cities. And I think we had about 5,000 complement, counting the planes and the pilots and the Airedales that took care of the planes. From there on, the Germans were sinking ships right and left with wolf packs. And so they sent us through the canal back on the Atlantic to escort ships to Europe. And we did that. That was in 41, early 41. And we were supposed to get overhauled about then in Norfolk. So we were in dry dock when the war started, when the Japs bombed Pearl Harbor.
You would say that you were kind of at war before the war, because the Atlantic, with this U-boat threat being ever present, I'm sure you guys were on alert on that ship.
Well, sure we were. And but anyway, when the war started, we were supposed to get overhauled there and get leave. But the war started, and all they did was put more guns on us and send us back through the canal to the Pacific. And from then on, we were cruising in the Pacific. We hit the first part of any contact with the Japanese. And on one night, our planes were out, and we'd made some contact with some Japanese planes. And the pilots came back, it was in the night, and they were trying to land at night. And in those days, the planes had a red dot in the middle of the star. You know, and we were shooting our own plane. I remember that pilot, he'd come down the ladder, he was all bloody, and he was madder than hell. But after that, they took the dot off, and it was a star then.
So the people on your ship thought he was a Japanese pilot.
Well, all they see probably was that red dot, but it went quick.
I want to take you back to December 7th, because that's one thing I like to ask everyone on the show about. A lot of people weren't in the service yet. You were. And I'm curious, if you're on a ship with 5,000 guys and you're, you know, in dry dock, as you said, but you get the news that America has been attacked and you're at war, I'm imagining that makes a pretty big impression. How was that received on the Yorktown?
Well, I was on Liberty in Norfolk. And we said, well, that ship's not going to leave for a while. We just got more drunk. That's all. But then everybody was called back from Liberty and around to get on the ship.
And would you say that your focus, your outlook, your attitude or expectations changed from that point on?
Oh, yeah. We were, you know, of course you're young and you're gung-ho. You don't care about the war. Bring the Japs on, you know. So, but like I say, we got back to the Pacific. Later on, we were in the Coral Sea, just cruising, like that picture I showed you. We were at sea 104 days, trying to fool the Japanese, thinking there was more ships. But then we got in the Coral Sea battle, which involved the old Lexington and us and other ships. And that's when we got hit, well, a direct hit with a 500-pound bomb. It was armor-piercing, too. So it went down and exploded on the fourth deck. And I don't know how many guys got it there, but it came all the way back through and caught me. And I was just two decks down from the flight deck.
Well, and that's what I wanted to ask you about. What were your duties on the ship, and where were you on a typical shift for you to be on duty? What kind of things were you doing?
Well, I was in a repair party, you know, and I was sent through the ship with a set of headphones, and if anything would happen, anything I would see, I could call into the main repair parties, and I happened to be in the wrong compartment, and the bomb came up and caught me.
What were you doing in the wrong compartment?
I was supposed to be checking, you know, going through the different compartments. And if anything happened in that area, then I was supposed to report it. And it did happen in that area. And there was two other men, and there were electricians in the same compartment. That was their station. And when the bomb, I was there plugged in, listening to what was going on. You could hear the airplanes, and all the battles were going on. And all of a sudden, something hit me in the face like you hit with a sledgehammer. It scared. I wasn't scared. I thought I was dead. It was a terrible shock. And then the compartment filled with smoke. And there was one kid in there panicked. He came out and got me and found me in the dark. And I finally got to the door and got the hatches off. And we got up to the hangar deck. And I could see I had skin hanging off me. And I had shrapnel on the leg and my side. But you don't think of anything. You try to save your life, and the adrenaline is running. And a medic came out and gave me a shot of morphine and took me somewhere and laid me down. And then later I went to the sick bay, put me in a bunk, and then they sprayed us with Jensen Violet. It made us purple. Mm-hmm. Every place I was exposed, it blew skin off of me. And we were looking like purple eaters, all of us wounded. But later, I don't know where we went from there. I think they went back to Tonga. We'd been there before. Tonga Island is a British island.
Well, I wanna ask you about the moments leading up to that, because this is the Battle of the Coral Sea, 1942. You said you're on the headphones and you can hear what's going on.
Yeah, I could hear the pilots talking, and the ship was at full speed.
So did you expect that the ship could be hit at any moment, or did this just catch you?
It just caught me. Hell no, I wasn't thinking about anything.
Just someone stepped up and whacked you in the face, knocked you over.
We finally got back to Pearl Harbor, and they took the wounded off and put us in a Mobile hospital up on the hill. and then to ship effectively as quick as possible.
So just to paint the picture for our listeners, and obviously you weren't topside, you couldn't see this plane coming, but in the time since, I'm sure you've understood more and more about what happened there. This was a single 500-pound bomb that was dropped by a Japanese plane?
Armor-piercing bomb.
And where did it hit on the ship?
Hit right amidships. Mm-hmm. Went right down through the hangar, the flight deck, hangar deck, I think about the third deck. It exploded. It went all the way back up through, mm-hmm. out of the flight deck.
So it sounds like to me, I mean, this is probably exactly where the Japanese would have liked to hit your ship. This was a pretty serious blow that they dealt the Yorktown.
Yeah. Anyway, I was off the ship in the Pearl Harbor. After that, the guys came back, all the survivors, and they put them in a big old field out there, and they had no records, so they had no money. One of my friends was on there. He borrowed some money from me, but he did pay me back.
Now, just so our listeners know what we're talking about here. So you're wounded at the Battle of the Coral Sea, and you're recovering, and maybe before we talk about what happened to the Yorktown after that, maybe you should tell me the full extent of your wounds. You're wounded in the face, the arms, and the legs?
Well, yeah, I had a shrapnel in me, man. But every place I was exposed, it blew skin off of it. Mm-hmm. Belted my hair, and my fingernails were belted, and my eyebrows, my ears, they got infected. And they used sulfur, which was new at that time.
You're describing this very matter-of-factly because you lived it and you told the story a few times. But I think everybody listening, and certainly the thought inside my head is this sounds extremely painful and scary.
Well, yes, it was scary. Especially when you think you can't be hurt when you're 18, you find out you can.
At that point, did this alter your vision, your hearing, anything like that?
No. Later, about a year later, I noticed one eye was starting to mess up. And through the years, they both got bad.
And meanwhile, your ship, the Yorktown, you're at the hospital recovering. But the Yorktown went back out to sea, and you watched it sailing out. What were you thinking as you watched that big old ship head out of there?
Just kind of was sorry, because we weren't in very good shape, you know, after they did it so quickly, repaired it. Yeah, it wasn't 100%.
We're probably going to get to our first commercial break here, but just to set the stage here, it sounds like you're saying, as you're there wounded in Pearl Harbor, recovering from the wounds you suffered at the Coral Sea, you're watching this ship limp back out and thinking, something bad might happen to these guys. Is that fair to say, or am I saying too much?
Yeah, it was really, it's kind of eerie, really, you know, watching it, because hell, they'd go back into a big battle that nobody knew what was going to happen. And it happened bad, really.
And it would happen bad. And we're going to talk about that when we come back, hear about the fate of the Yorktown and Bill Carpenter's take on that. Also, what he did for the rest of the war and where along the line in World War II he got married. We're going to hear all of that when we come back. It's Hometown Heroes on News Talk 580 KMJ.
On the front line of freedom, you're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler on News Talk 580 KMJ.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. We'll continue now with Purple Heart recipient Bill Carpenter of Fresno, originally from Kansas. He told us how he joined the Navy after he turned 18. He was assigned to the USS Yorktown, served some time on that ship in the Atlantic as they dodged the U-boat threat, worried about German forces. But then once war occurred in the Pacific, the Yorktown headed there. And you heard Bill tell how he was wounded by a Japanese bomb that hit the Yorktown at the Battle of Coral Sea. He's still dealing with some of those injuries all these years later. He has the Purple Heart on the wall of his home in Fresno. And we're going to move on from his wounds to the damage inflicted on his ship, the USS Yorktown. He told us how it sailed out. He watched it feeling like something bad might happen to that ship. It wasn't in great shape as it headed back out to sea. And when we think of the Battle of Midway, Bill, I think in the big picture, people see that as a huge day for U.S. forces, a turning point in the Pacific War, and a great victory for the Americans. But for the USS Yorktown, it turned out to be a tragic day. How did you hear about what happened to your shipmates?
Well, they brought them back to Pearl Harbor, and they put them all out in the field. I don't know what they're going to do with them. A lot of them were assigned to the West Virginia, which had been brought up from the sea of Pearl. It had been sunk in Pearl Harbor. It had been brought up with the cofferdams and floated into dry dock. So they took a lot of our guys and would have borne it. And then when I got out of the hospital, they assigned me to West Virginia. And we stayed with it to get it back to the States. They were just fixing it up enough to get it back to Bremerton. So they rebuilt it. That's when I went home, finally got leave after 3 years, and I got married.
Well, and that's a big event, but I don't want to gloss over the sinking of the Yorktown. You talked about the survivors coming back to Pearl where you were, but do you remember finding out that the Yorktown had sunk and what that meant to you?
Oh, yeah. I talked to a lot of the guys, and they told me that the bomb went down the stacks, knocked out all the power, and the ship lay dead in the water, couldn't move. So the captain finally called for abandoned ship. And they did, and they all got off. The ship was still floating, so they asked for the skeleton crew to go back aboard and try to cut off the guns that was listing heavily on the port side. Yeah, and they went aboard, and then there was a destroyer came. Destroyer Hammond came alongside to furnish power for the welders and the cutters. They were cutting off some of the 5-inch guns to try to bring it up. To ride it, and a Japanese submarine laying off there sent two more fish torpedoes, one into Hammond, which exploded immediately, and the other into the Yorktown, which that was all it could take. And it, of course, they all got off, and that was it. They were going to send a seagoing tug out to tow it back to Pearl until that happened. So that's all she could take, and she finally capsized and sunk. I felt sorry for the four destroyer. They were laying there with all their torpedoes, or the depth charges were set, and you can imagine what happened to it. And then after that, that's when they all came back to Pearl, the survivors.
What did that do to you emotionally? Because here you've already had to deal with your own wounds, and you're still recovering from that, but to hear that this giant ship was down at the bottom of the sea. How devastating was that for you?
Well, you know how you feel. Hell, that was your home. And it's gone. In fact, I got an artist's conception of it on the bottom. I don't know if you've ever seen that or not.
Well, I know they found it a few years ago.
It was in 99, I think, that was published. So it's down there.
Did it ever cross your mind where you would have been on the ship that day at Midway had you not been wounded at the Coral Sea, and whether or not you would have survived Midway?
I don't think it was hit there then. I would have probably survived, yeah. But one thing, when I was laying in the sick bay, oh man, it was just outside down a hatch. They got an alarm went off down there. Like it was on fire, there's an ammunition hole. And I, oh God, I got to get out of here. And I said, oh hell, where am I going to go? Oh, the hell, we'll let it blow. But the chief went down there and checked it. And it was just smoking, and because of the matter of the station, they can see everything that's happening on the ship, you know. But I thought, oh hell, it's just gonna blow, and I didn't know about it.
You were ready to go?
Yeah, better be.
Well, I can think of a few people who are glad that you didn't. The big family that you have now, very thankful for that. I've got to ask you, did you lose friends either in the battle where you were wounded or when the ship sank, and how did you deal with that?
Both of them, because I knew some real well. In the Battle of Midway, they had guys on 20 millimeters. Uh-huh. Some were just assigned to them because they were all around the ship, and they weren't regular gunners, but everybody brought a gun. And this one boatsmate I knew real well, he got sprayed by a Japanese plane coming in, and he died right there. And I knew several others. I don't know, we lost a lot of men. There's a story that I don't know to tell it or not about our chaplain. I don't remember his name, so nobody would know him anyway. But when the ship was laying dead in the water, he came up on the hangar deck and ordered them to lower the boats so he could get off. And he should have been around the wounded and the dead. But the poor guy chickened out. He's a chaplain. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't tell if I even knew his name. But I thought that the guy said they were so mad at what he had done. he didn't come through when he, you know, was needed the most. But you feel sorry for the poor guy, really. That's when he should have come through. You don't know how you're going to react in a war.
It's hard to know how you'll react until you're put in that position, and no one wants to be put in that position.
But you are.
A couple more things about the Yorktown. Well, first of all, it sank. Obviously, the last time you had seen it was when it sailed off from Pearl Harbor. And then years and years later, decades later, you find out that divers have located at the bottom of the sea. Did that mean anything to you?
Yeah. In fact, there's an artist's conception of it in that magazine. It was, yeah, just sad. I could see parts there from the pictures they took where I used to be on the one of the guns there. I used to be one of that gun. You know, and there it is. Down there. Yeah, that was something.
When you think about the guys that lost their lives on that ship, and you look at your own life, and you look at the family that you have now, and all the things you've gotten to experience, how do you account for all of that? What kinds of things do you think, and how do you want those shipmates of yours to be remembered?
Well, I think I'm lucky, really. I got to live. And, you just think about them. They never grow old. And you're growing old, and you get thoughts like that. Why didn't they get to live? You know, like today with our boys over there. And that's what makes me so angry. That's not a war. Nothing we can win. It doesn't seem like. Been there 10 years. And what do? We don't win nothing. I don't know what we're doing there, really. Because we want to win. And we did.
What we've been talking about is the price of that victory. And it sounds like that's something that is not just a concept to you. It's something that you felt personally in seeing guys pay that ultimate price for that freedom. So they put you on the West Virginia. And so you go from a ship that eventually sank to a ship that's back from the dead because it was hit on December 7th and now is limping back to the States. Were you a little nervous at all to get on that ship, even though you're just going to Washington?
No. Although we didn't have any superstructure hardly. And when we came into the sound there, Canadian, they were going to fire on us. They couldn't identify the ship.
That would have been a pretty tragic end. Survive the Coral Sea, and your ship goes down at Midway, and then you're hit by Canadians in the Pacific Northwest.
One of Fuca Straits there. But anyway, we were there a year, and that's when we went and got married back to Kansas.
Well, let me hear that story. Had you been sending letters back and forth? Was this something that was on your mind?
Ever since the eighth grade. She was 14, I was 15. Mm-hmm. And then I was gone 3 years. And then when I got home, I sent her a ring, you know. And I didn't even ask her to marry me, I just sent her a ring. Come to find out she had another guy pretty well on the string when I got home. he was a pilot, Navy pilot. Just,
early bird gets the worm kind of thing?
Yeah. I was there. He wasn't. They put us in an old barracks across the bay. It was old World War, what else? Spanish-American War veterans were living there then. And they put us up in an old barracks with a little bitty room with one single bed and a dresser. But it was better than nothing in those days. It was very cheap. So all those married kids were up there, all newlyweds. There must have been 50 on that one floor. And at night you hear pitter-pat, pitter-pat down to the one bathroom. It was really fun, though. We had a lot of fun there. And then, but we did. After a year, the ship was ready, and we had to go. And we got back just in time for MacArthur going into Leyte. And we were with them, shelling the beaches and stuff.
This is on the USS West Virginia.
And from then we went to Iwo Jima, which we thought was going to be easy. Didn't look like any trouble there. Oh, my God, I don't know how many we lost. Marines. And you couldn't dig the Japanese out of there.
So what kinds of things were you doing as these are battles where there's a lot going on land, but the big Navy ships are just shelling these islands? What were you doing aboard the West Virginia during, say, a battle like Iwo Jima?
Well, I was on a repair party, on the Yorktown. Mm-hmm. And I had a battle station. And then from we don't know really in any danger. Mm-hmm. For us, is the Marines had the danger. Oh, yeah. And they killed, I don't know how many got killed there. But then we went on to Okinawa and did the same thing, but that's when the Japanese were sending suicide planes, kamikazes. And that was scary. Every morning and every night, they'd come. General quarters. And I was really getting, I'd been wounded once, and I thought, I don't like that. I was getting nervous. I thought I was going to flip out. But anyway, my battle station was on the mess deck, right by the galley. And that one day we were sitting there, and a plane hit right in the galley, where you could hear right through it. And another time I jumped up, and the chief and I grabbed a hold and went in the galley part where there was shells exploding and fuel oil and stuff. You could hear it boom, boom, zinging around us. So I came through. But it was scary. I'm sorry.
Oh, that's all right. I can't imagine living through it in the first place, let alone reliving it 65 years later. Like you said, you'd already been wounded once. So when you're in something like this, you probably think, well, before it was just me. Now I've got a wife that I'm trying to come back to. Do you think there was something that helped you get through those situations where easily it could have been the end for you?
No. Just my duty, I guess.
Did you think about your wife? Did you pray? Did you just try to hide somewhere? What did you do?
Well, you couldn't hide, not on the ship. Not when, you know, you never knew, no foxholes on the ship. But I got through that, and I picked up, a piece of off the plane was laying there. It guts all over it. I took it down later, and there on the side of the ship is scuppers with water usually. And I put it in there to clean it off. Somebody stole it. And I said, I didn't want it anyway.
So you were going to bring home a souvenir, a piece of a kamikaze plane?
But I didn't. Probably better off. It would have haunted me, probably.
Well, we're going to take one more commercial break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about the end of the war and how Bill experienced that, some of the things he's been up to since, and what he's most thankful for all these years later. You're listening to Hometown Heroes. It's News Talk 580 KMJ.
This is Hometown Heroes. Honoring everyday Americans who answer the call of duty on 580 KMJ.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. We'll come down the home stretch now with Bill Carpenter, 89 years old. He's lived for decades in Fresno, California. If you want to see what he looks like, see what he and his wife Mary look like after 68 years of marriage, you can go to our website, kmjnow.com. You'll also see other photos of Bill from his time in the Navy and also some of his artwork, a very accomplished artist, as the walls of his Fresno home prove. But Bill, let's go back to World War II. You're on the USS West Virginia, and you're on the island of Okinawa, or at least off the island of Okinawa, where you've witnessed some of one of the bloodiest battles of World War II, and you end up getting some pretty good news that things are all over. How did you get that news that the war was over?
Well, it just came on intercom of the ship. And then at night, you could see guys shooting everything they had off over on the beach. It was like a 4th of July. And then that was it. They stopped the kamikazes, it was over. But they did more damage. They killed more sailors and sunk more ships with those planes crashing into them. And that was the scariest part of the war for me. Mm-hmm. My God, you couldn't relax. We'd lay down a smoke screen, morning and night to cover the ship, but they still hit us. We got hit by two of them. One of them was hit on the water, just above the water, right at the starboard side of the ship. Mm-hmm. And the Marines there on the 40-millimeter mount kept firing at it and firing at it and firing at it until it finally blew it up. And it just sprayed an airplane all over the deck. It would have killed those Marines. It would have wiped them right off.
And you've already told us about the other one that nearly took you out.
Yeah, up in the mess hall, They tried to get the bridge because the San Francisco, the cruiser, it came into Pearl Harbor there, and the whole bridge was gone. killed practically all their officers. And that's what they were so scared of. My God. We had an admiral aboard the West Virginia at that time when we were there. And his executive officer, his aide, was a commander. We had our station was down below deck, below the armor deck. And he was down there walking around every night. He was down there. And he finally said, told us one day, he said, the admiral's so scared, he don't want to go on the bridge. I said, oh, God, that hell of a thing for an admiral to say. I don't know the admiral's name, so I didn't tell anybody. But that was something. He didn't want to go on that bridge at all. I can't hardly blame him.
I guess that makes you feel like you're in some place safe if that's where the admiral wants to go, huh?
Oh, I was all scared. As you know, just coming every morning and every night, and you couldn't blow them up. We did have to, you had to blow them up to stop them because they were there to crash into you because they didn't go, they weren't going back home. Mm-hmm. They were told not to come back. But some of them did ditch their planes, mm-hmm. and I don't blame them. I would have too.
Well, what did it mean to you personally to know that this is over, that a war that you've been in since before it started? This has been 5 years since you joined the Navy. Since then, you've been married. You've got this wife at home that you're hoping to get back to. And now, finally, this war is over. Was it almost too good to be true? Did you have a hard time believing it?
Yeah. And immediately, I got transferred off Okinawa and started back on a merchant ship. And when MacArthur called in all ships to Japan, and they dumped us off on Saipan, so I had to wait for a troop ship to take us on back to Long Beach. Yeah, I was ready. We got drunker than hell when we hit Long Beach. It's a wonder we didn't get killed. But I guess God was looking over us.
Maybe God had to look out for you as much then as he did in some of those battles, huh?
Well, yeah, maybe more so.
What was it like for you? Can you describe the moment when you got to see Mary again? Because I'm sure there were some days, like when that kamikaze hit the West Virginia, that you didn't know if you were ever going to see her again.
Well, this buddy of mine, his wife died while he was overseas, so he left with me from Okinawa, and we went all the way back to Kansas together. He bought a car in Long Beach, and Mary knew the wife. I think she went to the funeral back in Missouri. So we went with him up to there, you know, and then he brought me back to Neodache there, and then he went on.
How good did it feel to see her face again?
Oh, God. That was, come in there in the middle of the night, really, because we drove all night and day. Mm-hmm. And stepped on her foot, that remember? No, we were happy to get home, really. And then I was sent back to Shoemaker. I wasn't out of the Navy yet. Mm-hmm. And I got discharged there. I went into the hospital and they found my eyes. And I medically discharged there.
And the problem with your eyes was a result of that first bomb that hit the Yorktown, right?
Well, it could have been. Because it started not long after that in one eye. And then gradually moved to the other eye after it had been out a while. It kind of changed my life. I was going to be a commercial artist, but then I was too meticulous after the other eyes started going to do. I could still paint, but not the work that I tried for a job in Washington at D.C. I sent my work there, and they called me, or they sent a letter to me after I moved to California. But then my eyes was worse anyway, and so I would have been I would have been doing sea life for the government, illustrating different stuff.
Is that something that you just always did from the time you were a kid? You just loved to draw and paint?
That's why I was such a poor student. I drew all the time.
You're always doodling. You've had vision problems pretty much since the war. And how long now have you been legally blind?
Oh, God, for many years now. So I went to the blind center in Palo Alto, about 6 weeks, and took all everything they had for me there. But I can't drive because I had no center vision either eye. See, I can't see your face till I shift over here.
Some would say that's a blessing, but What I'm getting at is this obviously has been a life-changing thing for you. It prevented you from doing some of the things that you wanted to do. You wanted to be a commercial artist, but it hasn't stopped you from doing a lot of other things. And right now you're still working on a painting in your bedroom right now, or in your study there.
Like I say, I got no centers, and I had to use peripheral. So I have a hell of a time. I can't have a hell of a time getting things accurate. But I still try, you know.
Does that ever make you bitter or wish that things had been different?
Yeah, when I was about 27, 28 years old, and I couldn't seem to connect with anything. And I don't know. But I did all right.
Well, I'm sure at some point you think about the guys who didn't come home, and then it's hard to complain about that. But I'm curious if you've ever thought about the fact that since you came home from the war and got back with Mary, who you'd married in the middle of the war, you guys went on to have 6 children. Now you've got grandchildren and great-grandchildren. You've got a couple dozen people who never would have been born if you didn't survive the war. When you think about that, what does that do to you? What does that say? What does that mean?
It meant that I was meant not to be killed, you know. Just tells you, well, you should have been dead. So many guys were killed from that bomb, especially. You know, I told you it seared their lungs, most of them. And they died that night. Evidently, I don't know whether the phone protected my mouth or not, because it just blew skin off of me. It hit me right in the face and the hands. But I don't know. Maybe my guardian angel.
I don't think anybody's going to argue with you. And I want to, you talked about the bomb. I want to read this. On your wall, you have an article from back during World War II. It's got a picture of you smiling, and the headline says, "Cited for Bravery." And if you read down, it says your citation was as follows. Carpenter was advanced for outstanding conduct in action against the enemy on May 8, 1942. He was in the Marine compartment when a bomb struck the ship. After the explosion, he grasped the situation quickly, proceeded to the third deck, and entered the damaged compartment, which was dark and filled with smoke. He guided 2 injured men to safety and returned to the compartment to fight fire and to repair damage. He was severely burned but continued his efforts until ordered to the sick bay by his superior officer. So you're saying they glamorized that and you didn't do all that?
No. I was in the compartment.
So you were already there. You didn't have to go find it. But you did keep doing your job and try to help people.
It came to me. I was laying in my bunk there in the sick bay. He said, "Bill, we fixed you up. We you know, this is what they did."
So you saying they sounded they made it sound more heroic than it was.
I was saving my life, mm-hmm. But that'd be 2 other guys.
But did you or did you not help those guys too?
Sure, I did, because this one kid was panicked. I don't know what would happen to him, mm-hmm. And he didn't know where he was going or nothing. And but something took a hold of me and put me there.
And about this time, 66 years ago, you guys did put a victory together in the Pacific, and the whole war was brought to an end. When you think back about that now, when you think about the 16 million who served, all the people back home, like your wife, who were doing their part for the war effort, and the 400,000 Americans who didn't come home from the war, who paid that ultimate price, what do you think we need to know today? When one of your grandkids said, "Grandpa, tell me about World War II," what's the most important thing that you want them to grasp and remember?
Well, just remember I don't know. It seemed like the American comes through. He might do a lot of silly things as a youth and all, but when he's put to the test, seemed like they always have. To me, you know, kids get on drugs and all kind of stuff, but you put them in the service, and it'll either make you or break you, I think.
What did it do for you?
Well, it made me appreciate life a lot. And just be thankful, really.
Does it give you any sense of pride, or is it a powerful reminder, or how would you describe what it means for you to look up on your wall and see that purple heart sitting there?
It makes me proud that I served. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the main thing. I served my country.
This doesn't have anything to do with the military, but I've got to ask you, because I'm struck over and over again, so many of the veterans that I interview have been married for more than 60 years, and that's just so uncommon in our society today, the way divorce rates are. I have to ask the secret. Anytime I talk to someone who's been married more than 60 years, I have to ask the secret. You've been married 68 years, so maybe I should ask your wife this question. But what would you say is the secret to your 68-year marriage?
Well, I told you on the phone.
What's that?
That I was around her. I did a lot of bad things. She knows it. And she stuck with me, though. And when I found the church, it cleared everything up for me. The things, the way we have to live on this earth. If we want to be happy. Otherwise, you can't stay in the dark all the rest of your life. You're going to die young and lose everything you ever loved. That's what I found. I don't know what others find. But that's what I found the years I've been here.
So for you, what you told me on the phone was finding the Catholic faith. So that was something because of Mary?
Because of the Catholic I worked with. He was a good, pretty good example, I thought, and went to a mission once. Two priests, one taking one side and one the other. And it seemed like I just got a message. That's what I just came to me. It was a gift, I think. I think it was a gift from God.
Well, I would say 68 years of marriage and six children and all your grandchildren and great-grandchildren are a pretty great gift from God. And I felt very privileged to share this time with you today. Bill, thank you for serving our country, and thank you for being able to share some of that with us.
Well, thank you. And my children have been asking me for years to tape something.
Well, I'm glad we got that done. Did we leave anything out? Is there anything else you need them to know?
Well, I don't think so. Mainly they want to know about the war. I read a lot of books that have been written on the war, on the ship I was on. I have several books on New Yorktown. We're pretty famous. Really, I think probably the most famous ship, one of them, in the war.
Well, that is certainly true. And it's also true that the Yorktown is still remarkably intact, 3 miles deep in the Pacific Ocean. If you go to our website, kmjnow.com, you'll find a link to photos of the USS Yorktown as it was discovered 13 years ago. You can also see photos of the Yorktown in battle during World War II and the damage it sustained in that Battle of the Coral Sea in which Bill was wounded. Just to put it in a little perspective for you, that day when the bomb burned the skin off of Bill's arm, sent shrapnel into his legs, and injured his eyes in a way that would alter his life and change the scale on which he was able to eventually pursue that passion of painting, Bill was wounded and, of course, received the Purple Heart, but 66 men were killed on the Yorktown that day in May of 1942. When the Yorktown sank at Midway a month later, 86 more were left either dead or missing on the Yorktown itself, and 81 more died aboard the USS Hammond. That was about a third of that courageous destroyer's crew. You've probably heard me mention many times on this program that a total of more than 400,000 Americans died while serving in World War II. And perhaps that's what's most important to remember this weekend as we mark the 66th anniversary of the end of that war. As we celebrate that spirit of 45, let's not forget those men and women who paid the ultimate price. I thought of that last night in Clovis. One of my favorite annual events is the North American Pole Vault Championships that take over Old Town Clovis every August. And before the huge crowd there saw these fine-tuned athletes soaring high above the bar, they first heard a bugler named Ray Ramos, a proud Vietnam veteran, perform taps in honor of those who have given their lives in exchange for our freedom. That's the kind of class I expect from Bob Fraley in that great event each year. And taps is going to be heard a whole lot more all over the country this weekend at Spirit of 45 celebrations like the one at Atascadero Lake Park tomorrow. When we think about those lives cut short, I hope that you think about how much we owe those souls, how fragile our own existence is. In the case of our guest today, Bill Carpenter, look at the photos on kmjnow.com or on the Hometown Heroes Facebook page, and you won't believe that he and Mary have been married 68 years because neither of them looks old enough. But if Bill did not survive all those close calls we heard about, there are 6 children, 13 grandchildren, and 8 great-grandchildren, 27 people who would have never been born. I'm in the same boat. Maybe you are too. And if you're not sure, I think you should find out. Do a little digging into the World War II history in your family. You'll find much more about this week's guest at KMJNow.com, and you can see photos every week by joining the hundreds of listeners who are following Hometown Heroes on Facebook. If you bump into Bill Carpenter at the Wyndham in Fresno, make sure you thank him for serving our country. And since he's a Navy man, we'll close the show with a little Anchors Away today, and we'll be back next week with another installment of Hometown Heroes on News Talk 580 KMJ.